Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, 94 WIP. John Johnson with you. In the midst of all this Phillies conversation, with John Middleton speaking almost unexpectedly, the timing of it is very odd. We seem to forget there is a huge game out in San Francisco between the Eagles and 49ers, and there hasn't been a whole lot of positivity to speak of, and even more injuries begin to pile up. Breaking news all over, you know, throughout Saturday as it pertains to the Philadelphia Eagles and their offensive line. So nice enough to join us tonight to break down what exactly is going on, what the offensive line could look like. Do the Eagles have a chance in you-know-what to beat the 49ers? From NBC Sports Philadelphia, Dave Zangaro. Dave!
Hey, John. Slow news day, huh?
What a wild, wild Saturday. So, Dave, let's start with this. The news comes out, I guess, what is it, Saturday morning-ish, early afternoon-ish, Jason Peters. So, initially, I swear it was his shin. He took a helmet to the shin. Then he was sick, and now he's on the IR with a toe injury. Can you explain this timeline to us?
Yeah, the timeline is a little confusing. I was able to get a little more clarity on it today. So basically during the game last week, he took a shot to the leg unrelated to this injury he has now. So the whole timeline is kind of strange because he got hurt at the end of that game. He leaves the game. Doug Peterson the next day says it was fatigue, but it clearly wasn't, or maybe he was tired, but he clearly got hurt on that play. Then Wednesday and Thursday, he misses practice with illness. And during this season, we're going to see a lot of this. It's guys, if anyone shows flu-like symptoms or they're around someone who shows flu-like symptoms, they basically get sent home or they don't come in for work that day. So he misses Wednesday and Thursday. And then Friday, he tells the team about some discomfort in his foot. They do an MRI. They find out the toe injury is significant enough that he'll go on IR. So they kind of planned all week on him being a left tackle, and all of a sudden he's not. It's going to be Jordan Mailata tomorrow night.
Oh, my goodness. Dave, I mean, I think I'm speaking for every single Philadelphia Eagles fan and probably beat writer. Jordan Mailata starting at left tackle. I mean, just saying that alone makes me want to run for cover. I mean, what on earth are you expecting from him?
I have no idea. And I don't think anyone has any idea what to expect from this kid. I mean, he's played 20 snaps so far, which I guess is a good thing in a way. It's not like his first start is going to be his first NFL action. He played 18 snaps against Washington. He played a couple snaps last week at the end of the game. So not a big body of work, obviously, but at least he's been out there. At least hopefully that got some of the jitters out. But I mean, this is a guy who didn't know what American football was like 4 years ago.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he's starting the NFL game. I'm intrigued. I mean, we've seen this kid from the moment they got him. He's a talent athletically. He's 6'8", 350, moves incredibly well.
But essentially on the depth chart, though, he's like the backup to the backup, yes?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, but at this point, the depth chart is a lot different than what it was to start the season. I mean, he's
right.
The third left tackle in.
Right.
Because they had Andre Dillard, and then they didn't even have Jason Peters at left tackle right before the season. So he has been the backup left tackle in practice. He obviously is the backup left tackle because he came in relief of Jason Peters the two times he had to leave games.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I have no idea what to expect. The problem with an offensive lineman like this is, and we kind of saw with Jason Peters last week.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Peters had a bad game last week, right? But really, he had like six terrible snaps, and the rest of it was fine. But you walk away from that game thinking he had an awful game, because that's all it takes for an offensive lineman. If you have five bad snaps in a game, you give up two sacks, that's a terrible performance. And that's the thing that scares you with an unproven guy and a guy without a lot of experience like Mailata, because he's entering this game and you just don't know if the consistency is going to be there. I'm intrigued to see what happens, though.
Is it surprising to you at all? I mean, although they may say this, we never know for certain until the offense takes the field for the first time. But are you surprised that of, I suppose, whatever options are there, whether they've played the position or not, that they're going with someone like this to protect a struggling quarterback's blind side?
I mean, it's not like they have a ton of better options, honestly. The only other thing they could do is to flip Lane Johnson from left to or from right to left and then put Jack Driscoll in at right.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee the way they're viewing that is then they're weakening two positions by doing it.
Okay.
Because obviously Lane isn't as good on the left side and Driscoll's not as good as Lane. So this is why, I mean, at this point, this is year three for Mailata.
Mm-hmm.
The experiment part of this has to be over. If he's not a viable backup at this point in his career, you have to abandon it. You can't. I love the idea of spending a seventh round pick on a developmental guy that you're going to bring along slowly. But at this point, if he can't play, is he ever? I mean, is he going to be able to? How long can you use a roster spot on a guy who can't play?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Why even have him on the roster? And you have a great column on that, by the way, on NBC Sports Philly. That you can find the link to it on Dave's handle at the letter D Zingaro NBCS. So, Dave, this makes matters only worse for the quarterback. In addition to the offensive line, Greg Ward and John Hightower are your top two wide receivers come game time. Is that correct?
Well, you have Greg Ward, you have John Hightower, Deontay Burnett will be there, Travis Fulgham will come up from the practice squad. Exactly. Those are their four receivers for this game. It's, you know, Deshaun's hurt, Alshon isn't ready, and that's what they're left with. And Jalen Rager's obviously on IR. Quez Watkins is not ready to come back yet. His practice window was activated this week, but he's not ready to play yet. So, yeah, you're left with a pretty bare wide receiver room. And the problem with that is you also don't have Dallas Goedert.
Right.
So
right.
At times, like even last year when the receivers were so banged up, they would just go with 12 personnel and kind of really rely on Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. And now you don't even have that. I'm not sure what their best personnel package is going to look like on Sunday. I guess it's 11 personnel with Zach Ertz and Greg Ward, John Hightower, and Deontay Burnett. I think that's probably your best skill position players.
You know, Dave, all the names you mentioned, you forgot one, and it's so incredibly telling because you're someone who spends most of the calendar year with the Eagles organization. I know J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is listed as doubtful, and nobody's expecting him to play, but where has he been otherwise? This is turning out to be yet another horrendous pick by Howie Roseman.
Yeah, it doesn't look good, and there were some signs for optimism this training camp. He had a good camp, and I think everyone at the time and when he was having a good camp was kind of tempering their expectations because it wasn't like he had a bad camp last year either. It's starting to look like just a bad pick. You can't fault him for being hurt, but even when he wasn't hurt, I mean, the last two times Carson Wentz threw to him, one was an interception, the other was just a terrible drop. And look, I understand you can kill Howie for the pick, but even look, you look at DK Metcalf and say, you could have had that guy, and I get it. But no one thought JJ was going to be this bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, basically a wasted roster spot. He was a good player at Stanford. It's pretty amazing that he's come here and just can't do anything. It's kind of shocking, and I think they're going to give him every opportunity. He's a second-round pick. You don't just throw those guys away. I had some people ask me, you know, if he has another bad game, do they cut him? Well, no. I mean, they invested in him, and they don't have a lot of other players at that position. So
right.
I think they're going to try to make it work, but if your confidence is low in him right now, I certainly don't blame you.
Yeah, and I mean this, and I'm just speaking out loud here. It just it bothers me so much because of how he now has the track record of missed draft picks at that position, and you know, and now I've been complaining that they used a second round pick on a quarterback, which is a vanity pick. But let me go to that position and Wentz specifically. He has been such a target for criticism thus far this year. Understandably, he has not looked good. Maybe Doug hasn't helped him out a lot. Maybe the coaching staff hasn't helped him out a lot. But in the end, he's the one on the field, and he's missing, you know, simple plays where he has a sure bet receiver at times. One thing that I hate is how so many are just quick to say, well, Carson stinks. I told you so. No one else was listening to me. Just that hot take nonsense without any more information beyond that. What I'm trying to figure out is why this is happening in season number 5 as a pro. Dave, in your opinion, what is wrong with Wentz right now?
How much time do you have, John? Because it's not a simple answer. I wish it was, because if it was a simple answer, they could fix it. I mean, if it was like just one little mechanical thing and they fix it and all of a sudden he's playing at a high level again, that'd be great. But I think it's part mental and part physical. I think a lot of the mental has now led to the physical, and for a guy in year 5, that just can't happen. Mm. I mean, it just can't happen. If you're supposed to be the franchise quarterback and you're supposed to, we saw what he can do even without the players around him. We saw him do it last year. The fact that he's struggling this much this year, I'm shocked by it, to be honest with you. And
yeah.
And I've kind of noticed the same thing as you, the kind of little victory lap I've seen from some of the anti-Wentz folks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those people would admit that he's playing so much poorly than even they expected. Because, no one thought Wentz was bad. Like, let's be honest about it. No one thought he was a bad quarterback. People thought maybe he's not elite. I think that was an overarching theme of the Wentz debate, but no one thought he was a bad player. I think everyone kind of assumed there was at least a baseline with him, right? Like everyone kind of assumed that he can at least be a serviceable quarterback. And I've been shocked to see him end up so far under that baseline through the first 3 games. I think that just because he does have some talent, I'm starting to question if he can put it all together, but I think he will be better as the season goes on, because he really can't be any worse.
I totally agree. Well, let me ask you if you think this might be one of the factors. The coaching staff, too many voices, perhaps. I mean, the constant turnover in the coaching staff, I have to imagine, plays a factor. And then you have, I you're there and I'm not. Well, I guess you're not there right now either, but you're always there prior to the pandemic. Do you think right now maybe playing a factor in this is that there's too many voices in the room trying to instruct him?
I think it's a fair theory. I can't say that definitively, and because I think only he really knows that. I think only he really knows why he might be overwhelmed at times. But if you look at what's happened, I think it's a very fair theory because, sure, him and Doug have been together for a long time. Him and Press Taylor have been together for a long time. But they did add other people, and they did it in a short off season. So maybe that's part of it. I think in general, coaching is some of his problem this year in terms of them not exactly catering the offense to what he does best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to be a give and take between him and the coaching staff. I think he needs to speak up maybe more than he is. I don't know how much he is, but if you're in year 5, you have a considerable amount of say in what the offense is doing. But it just doesn't feel like the coaching staff has a good feel for him right now.
Right,
I think that's fair to say. It doesn't seem like they really know what's going to get him out of this funk. And honestly, that comes down to Doug Peterson. I know that they have a quarterback's coach. I know they have other voices, but these two guys have been kind of married. Doug's always used the term married between the quarterback and head coach in this case, who is a former NFL quarterback and former quarterback's coach. They should be able to get this fixed, and it shouldn't take three games.
Well, and this kind of leads – I have two more questions for you. This leads into just a follow-up to what you're saying, because earlier this week, after Nick Foles did what he did in Chicago, when he spoke this week at practice, something he said resonated with me when he spoke about Frank Reich, how Frank got to know him and studied film of him as a quarterback and kind of customized his game plan around the strengths and weaknesses of Nick Foles. And when he went on at length about what Frank Reich did for him and understanding him, I began to then worry for Carson Wentz because we don't know for certain, but I have a fear that this Eagles organization, even though that Doug and Carson have been together for 5 years, it's kind of like that, here's a QB 101 template, and we're going to go with that as opposed to customizing it to knowing your actual quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there because we start with Nick, and he's about to play Frank Reich. He's asked a question specifically about Frank Reich. So I don't think, like, it was very complimentary of Frank, but I didn't take it as necessarily a damning comment about Doug Peterson. Because let's remember, Doug Peterson is the only guy to work Nick Foles out, many years ago when he got drafted. And those two have a great relationship. I think he kind of understood them. But I see what you're saying, because that's kind of been my thing with this coaching staff this year. I don't think they've necessarily played into his strengths. And we go back to the first game of the season when he was basically asked to be a statue in Washington behind a pretty poor offensive line, and they didn't move him enough out of the pocket. They brought in Rich Scangarello this offseason, and a big part of the reason, at least as it was explained to us, was because they identified the parts of Carson Wentz's game that they could really – get a lot out of Scangarello's scheme with, and a lot of that is rolling, a lot of that is throwing on the run, bootlegs, play action, and we've seen some of it, but I don't think we've seen enough of it, and it's kind of a tough thing to do right now, because I'm at almost at the point where I want to strip down the offense so bare bones and kind of build it back up, because it's so broken right now, and I don't know if you can implement all those new things, so... as much as I've actually been clamoring for it, I don't know if it's the time for it right now, because I kind of think you have to simplify everything. And if you have a boring vanilla scheme, I'd actually take that right now, just because I think you have to try to find a way to get your quarterback making the routine plays that he's been missing.
Yeah. Final question I have for you, Dave Zingaro, and everything we've said leads right to it. I understand about the whole strip it all down, but again, we're three games into the season. Game number four is coming up. Dave, can you see any way that the Eagles can beat the 49ers?
I'm not going to say it's impossible, because that is not a good thing to say about any game in this league, because the 49ers are really banged up. As banged up as the Eagles are, the 49ers are in a worse state. And they don't have their starting quarterback. They don't have two of their best running backs. I still think the Eagles aren't going to win this game. Yeah. I didn't pick them because I don't know how I could justify picking them right now. They're in a tough spot, man. I looked at the season right before it started and thought they should be at least 2-1, maybe 3-0. And they're going to need to be, because then the hard games start to come through. And now they're 0-2-1 and starting these games, and it just doesn't look good.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave Zingaro, if you want to read a great column, he has one on Jordan Mailata, who will be starting at left tackle tomorrow night. If you want all the details on what transpires leading up to, during, and after Eagles 49ers, I highly suggest you follow Dave on Twitter at the letter D Zingaro, NBCS. Dave, as always, thank you, sir.
Thank you, man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.